Good day, and welcome to the Kingfisher plc half year results Q&A conference call. Today's conference call is being recorded. Before I turn the conference over to Sarah Levy, Group IR Director, I'll explain how to ask a question. To ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. Please ensure the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star two. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Levy. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. This is Sarah Levy here, welcoming you to our Q&A conference call. I'm joined by Véronique Laury, CEO, Karen Witts, CFO, Arya Tavernincu, Chief Offer and Supply Chain Officer, and Steve Willett, Chief Transformation Officer. Before I hand over for questions, we wanted to announce that we will have a capital markets event on Friday, the 3rd of November. This will be in Farnborough, just outside London. The event will showcase some of next year's unified and unique ranges, alongside more detail on our digital strategy. Details will be provided shortly. So, we are assuming that you have already had a chance to listen to our audio webcast, which has been available on our website since 7:30 this morning. So this is now your opportunity to ask questions. So over to you.
As a reminder, please press star one to ask a question. We will now take our first question from Simon Irwin from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Right. Morning, everyone. Could I just ask a question or two about inventory and gross margins? The first half inventory levels are up, I think it's 17% year on year. Can you just talk us through the kind of volume and FX impact there, and whether you are going to have to run the business under one Kingfisher with kind of higher levels of inventory in the medium term? And then maybe if you can just talk a little bit more about dollar sourcing impact this year and how you see that progressing into next.
Okay, Simon, I should probably answer that one. It's Karen here. If you think about our inventory, it is higher than it was this time last year, and there's probably three dimensions to that. So the first dimension is actually the translation effect of foreign exchange on our inventory levels. I think the second thing is that we've got more inventory because actually we've got some growth in our business, particularly coming through from Screwfix and new stores in Poland. And then the remainder of it is some impact from having higher costs. So that's related to your second question around the dollar impact. So for sure we have seen some cost price increases which are related to the devaluation of the pound. And then finally, we actually are running with what I would call a little bit of buffer stock, higher stock levels. And on that aspect, I'm comfortable with the fact that we are running with those stock levels because it's new stock, it's good stock. Then just in terms of your question around gross margin and the impact of foreign exchange in general, I guess, on that. Well, our gross margins are flat, and we're still guiding to flat gross margin for the full year. So we are managing the foreign exchange headwinds that we're faced with, and clearly we're not alone in this, and it's something that we have been used to managing, albeit perhaps not to the same extent as we've seen this year. We are in a relatively good position, I would say, compared with some other organisations, because we do have this opportunity to work with our suppliers, and by consolidating our supplier base, actually that allows us to negotiate a bit more on price, not just unit cost price reduction, but actually offsetting some of the impact of the foreign exchange headwinds. Then as those headwinds are largely related to the devaluation of the pound and therefore sort of UK based, we have had some modest price increases in our UK businesses.
Right. And dollar impact should roll off when? In the first half next year or a bit earlier?
Well, I mean, it depends what happens to the dollar going forward. I mean, I think, you know, we tend to be hedged out about 6 to 9 months, so we're smoothing any impacts anyway, but you know, we will see the impact into next year.
Okay. And could I just ask a question about kind of morale in the business? I noted Vero's comments on the webcast. Obviously, you have lost some a reasonable number of senior staff in the first half this year. Do you think there's any kind of impact on kind of change management or morale within the business, or do you just think that they are kind of largely kind of people-related issues, or individual-related issues, you know, and that by and large you think that the business is kind of buying into the new plan?
So I think there are probably two questions in your question. I'm going to answer, because you are talking about few individuals at senior in the senior leadership, and then you are asking a question about the overall morale of the company, and I think that it might be two different things. I think related to that question about people who left the business, I think it's a mixture of things. I think for some people it's just the kind of natural life that they had good opportunity outside of the business, which actually is a good sign that people within Kingfisher are interesting other people. And a mixture of people that for whatever reason, you know, it's not about not agreeing with the strategy, but sometimes, you know, what we are doing right now is really demanding and hard, and for some people it's not the right timing for them as well. So, you know, this is a mixture of personal, professional thing. So, and to be fair, Simon, in when you've got such a big strategic change, you will always lose people. And actually, I'm not seeing that as a bad signal, but as a good signal. And then overall, the morale of the teams, including the leadership teams, you know, it's really hard work to work in Kingfisher right now, and I don't think anybody would say something else. But actually, I think over the last year, we've done big step in explaining, communicating, engaging people into the new strategy. And I think the best thing for people, especially people in stores and people in the operating company, but in the OSE organization, is just to start to see the result of what they are doing. So in a way, it's not about me or even the group exec saying to people, but when you start to see those new ranges being welcomed by the customer, you see sales growth, you know, this is the best thing for the morale of our team. So what I'm looking for is to have more of them. So the morale is increasing. But, you know, all in all, if you look at the engagement score, we are running survey. Actually, by the end, it's a little bit late right now because it's something we had in January this year, which is, you know, six, 7 months. The engagement score that we had was improving slightly, so which means that we've managed to go through that big transformation hard work without making it worse. Actually, we are working on a new tool that is going to give us a new engagement tool that is going to give us a kind of almost a real-life engagement store. We should be implementing it in January next year or December this year. So, you know, all in all, I think we're fine. We're fine. But, you know, it's hard work. We have highs and lows, you know, availability issue in store that we have been facing in H1. By definition, people in store, they are not pleased to say to the customer that we don't have the product that they want. But at the same time, I think they see that, you know, when we have the product, really customers are buying it, they like it, and there is a big, you've seen the video within the script, I imagine, but the people in store are really behind it.
So, excellent. Yeah. That's very clear. Thank you very much, Vera.
We will now take our next question from Richard Chamberlain from RBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, morning, everybody. Can you just got a couple of questions, please? On the UK side of the business, can you just talk through what drove the lower costs in the first half? And then in France, slide 22, you say that the digital platform is being accelerated. I just wondered whether you're expecting that to cause any further range disruption, and also what the plans are for Brico Depot. And I know you're clearly planning to upgrade the Casto website at some point in the second half, but what are the plans for Brico online? Thanks.
Okay, Richard, I'll take the first question about the lower costs in the UK. You know, I think over the years we have shown that actually we are quite good at what we call self-help, and although we've got quite a lot of fixed cost in our overall cost structure, we can flex things like bonuses, and we do flex things like bonuses. So, you know, what we've seen is, as the in accordance with the sales performance, we've paid out less bonuses, and we've actually taken a look at some of the other costs, like things like marketing, to optimise our spend there. Then I think an important thing to mention is the work that we're doing on GNFR, that's goods not for resale, and that's going very well in the UK, and that was actually part of the reason for our slight beat to consensus this morning. We have upgraded our GNFR forecast for the full year from 20 million to 25 million. 10 of that came through in the first half, and quite a bit of that came through from the UK. And that came from, you know, a multitude of things. We're working, we had a single global media tender. We've been working on the costs of call centres. We've been looking at standardisation and consolidation of print and paper requirements across the group. So, you know, there is cost reduction work which is in the other operating companies as well, but it's probably most visible in the UK.
Okay, thank you. And on the on the online, yeah.
Okay, so on digital and IT, so if we talk about Casto France, I think we've already said we're progressing with the rollout in Casto France. We've already put it in the stores. We've turned finance on, and we're moving on to do some of the back office supply chain stuff. And then the latter piece of that basically is to put the digital platform live, which we'll do basically the back end of this year. But it'll have a more material effect from a digital proposition point of view for Casto France into 18. On Brico, I think we in the results presentation we said we are moving the implementation of Brico forward, so we're moving forward Brico and Poland to basically start the rollout in this year, and we'll be aiming to finish Brico in the first half of next year, which will upgrade their digital capability as we're doing that. We're actually already making progress with Brico at the moment with digital, but to be fair, to make the step change we want, then we do need to get the IT platform in place.
Okay, great. Thanks, Steve. Karen, just going back on the bonus point you mentioned in the UK, so it sounds like you've paid slightly less in the UK. Was that broadly offset by higher bonus accrual in Poland this year? Because it sounds like that had a negative impact on the Poland profit in the first half.
Yeah, well, Poland's a smaller business than our UK businesses, and you know, within the UK, Screwfix performed very well, so we were absolutely paying bonuses. So, you know, where the sales performance has been good, then we've paid the bonuses, and where the sales performance has been weaker, then people understand that the bonuses are not paid. But, you know, net-net, we were using that leverage to offset softness on the sales line where necessary.
Got it. Okay. Thanks a lot.
We will now take our next question from Jeff Ruddle from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, morning, guys. Can I just? I think I understood on the presentation online that you said you had 44 new unique and unified ranges come through, and that 2/3 of those had seen sales growth in the half. Is that correct? In the period, is that correct?
Yes.
And is that in volume or value terms?
That's in volume.
That's in volume. And what have you done on pricing on those ranges?
So we've done, this is Arya speaking, we've done some price investments, as I said, in France particularly, focused on making Casto France more competitive. I think we mentioned that in the presentation. That's the main price investment that has been done.
But could you give us a sort of view on average how much the pricing, you know, are the prices down 3% or 5% or just give us some sort of
We don't give that.
No.
Okay.
But some of it is one of the benefits of some of the new unified and unique ranges coming through is actually we're building them to be very affordable. And a good example of that, which actually is also in the presentation, is the new bathroom range, which you know is a fantastic range. It's really good quality and it's really good price. But it's not a case of cutting the price there. It's actually it's been built to come in at a really strong price point.
I think Vera also mentioned in the presentation that the price index for Casto has moved 4 points from 108 to 104, which makes us over time more in line with, as a first step, in line with market, and then, of course, hopefully in the long term, more competitive as such.
And then finally, just on this, could you say what's happened to the space allocated to these ranges? I mean, are these all just basically going into exactly the same amount of space before, or some of these getting more or less space than they had previously?
It's slightly different depending on which operating company. For example, bathroom, in the big ones like B&Q, it's basically in the same space as it is today because it was already have slightly different on different stores also in B&Q. Then we have in our Brico Depot concept, it has been given more space because we haven't earlier merchandised bathrooms in the way we do now. For example, we would show complete rooms in a few of our Brico Depot stores, which is not the normal merchandising concept of Brico. So it's different in different operating companies how space has changed, but all in all, it hasn't changed a lot. It is not it's not an increase due to space increase. It's not.
Okay, that's great. Thanks so much.
We will now take our next question from Geoff Lowery from Redburn. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Two questions, please. Firstly, in terms of France, you underperformed the market by about 4% in the first half. Given what you've done around online price and improving availability, at what point do you think we can think about you tracking the market again? And then the second question is in terms of B&Q and property. You've obviously done the 60 or so store closures very efficiently. How do we think about the B&Q space footprint from here? And what sort of rent reductions are you seeing from landlords as you work through the pile of lease renewals?
Okay, I'm going to take it, Vero speaking. I'm going to take the first question, Geoff. I think you're right. As I said so we're still underperforming the market in France, definitely. As I said at the year-end result, we are not doing any tactical stuff, and we are addressing the issue we are facing with our plan. Actually, as you've seen it, we've done few things already. I think Aya mentioned in pricing. We've invested quite a lot in France in terms of pricing. We are revigorating the offer with our 44 new ranges, especially in Brico Depot. As Aya said, as an example, you take bathroom, we've implemented the new ranges, which is much better than the ranges that we have from an offer perspective, but from a merchandising perspective as well. And on the digital, I think the IT platform is now in Casto, as Steve said, and the digital new website will be ready by the end of this year. So actually, the truth is we start to see some benefits, especially in volume growth in the new categories. You know, it doesn't compensate yet the price investment all the time. I think for me the big step is going to be when we are going to launch the new website, because remember I really insist on that a few months ago that that was for me one of the major elements of our lack of competitiveness in France. So answer your question, how long it will take to see that coming through, I think we need to have some work to do from a marketing point of view to really tell the customer A, that the new range is there. B, to communicate not on a high-low strategy, but on an everyday low-price strategy, which we will. But we will do that when the new website is going to be launched, because we will have to communicate as well about that new website. So we plan with Mark, with the CEO, of doing quite a lot of activity by the beginning of next year. I think that should coming through in the course of next year. To be honest, not before. Even though we are seeing in numbers signs of, as an example, we add the traffic, the number of customers that grow in Casto last month, which hasn't happened for quite a while.
Thank you. And B&Q property?
Yeah. Well, you know, just talking about the store closures that we have done, Jeff, we're also pleased that not just have we closed the stores, but we've actually secured most of the lease exits now. So we've got 61 of those actually secured, 58 complete, 3 contracted, and just a handful, 4 that we're still working on. The rent reduction obviously varies property by property, but I guess on average what we've seen in terms of the renewals that we've done recently are rent reductions of maybe in the range of sort of 2.5% to 3.5%. And you know, at the moment we are comfortable that we closed the stores that we wanted to close in the UK, but we are constantly reviewing our property portfolio, and over the next 4 to 5 years, about 25% of the estate comes up for lease renewal, and we've actually got a governance process in place here that determines the way that we look at each and every lease to make a decision as to what we want to do with it.
Right, thank you.
We will now take our next question from Andrew Hughes from UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning, team. Got a question. Hi. I got a question about the phasing of the $350 million over the 5 years. Should we assume broadly the same phasing as the potential unified under the new phasing? Or do you have some ranges give you a much bigger saving than others, and is there some phasing of price investment over that period?
Okay, so the phasing of the $350 million isn't linear, and we said that, you know, back a couple of years ago at the Capital Markets Day, and we said that, you know, in the first early part of the plan, because of the way that the unified range was rolling out and the amount of clearance costs that we would be bearing as we cleared through old ranges, then you wouldn't expect a lot of margin expansion in that early part of the plan, and that's why for this year we're guiding to flat gross margins. But clearly, as you go out through the later parts of the plan and the clearance has been done, then we can allow the benefits to come through. In terms of the new phasing that we're talking about today, I mean, that is smoothing. It's not changing the end point at all, and it's not changing the $350 million. And you know, I think it's best if we update on that at our full year results. But we're doing that really from the point of view of risk mitigation. So whether you view that as an upside or a downside really depends on, you know, your view of risk in the plan already. But you know, if we have a smoother rollout of Unified, then we'll also have a smoother phasing of clearance and a smoother phasing of implementation costs.
Added to that, Andrew, about the cost price reductions, you know, a year ago we said that we had started with the easy categories and the quick wins. In hindsight, that was probably not the easiest categories in terms of the SKU count, for example, in light bulbs and so forth. At this point, and we also presented some of the CPRs both in the half year last year and in the capital market day. Repeated, we talked about the light bulbs, we talked about air treatment and kitchen sinks, where we showed a different mixed picture of CPRs, and added with the currency effects. Today, I see no reason to have a different picture than we have had. So we are consistent on the $350 million on year 5, because in continuous tender negotiations, we see that we have we remain confident with this $350 million on year 5.
And the benefits today are coming through as planned?
They are coming through as planned. So the CPR is not a concern of ours.
All right, because, I mean, just looking at what you've said for the current year? I mean, if you exclude clearance, you've got this 30 basis point gross margin gain, and that's on what looks like about a 15% uplift in your unified ranges. So, you know, going from 15% to 90% is a sort of multiple of six times. So take six times 30 basis points, it's under 200 basis points of gross margin gain, which doesn't come to 350 million. It comes to, you know, just over 200.
So I think the first thing is it's not linear, and the second thing is we actually made this quite simplistic when we were describing it. So we said that broadly the 350 million equated to a net 5% cost price reduction on our buying base of 7 billion. So if you wanted to look at that another simplistic way, which I think is the way that you've described to me, is that that would mean that over the time frame of the plan, we'd be looking for 3 percentage points of gross margin expansion. That would be, however, if it were all to come from cost price reduction. And actually, in reality, there's going to be a mix of margin rate expansion, that's right, and also some sales uplift, particularly from the unified ranges. And we'll also expect to see in our mix more own brand. So, you know, in H1, it's coming through as planned. The margins are flat. We're forecasting flat for the full year. And as you saw, I hope, in the presentation, you know, we're seeing some early examples of positive customer feedback on those new ranges and good sales growth already, although it's very early days.
Okay. So we're not losing chunks of that 350 million in France, where you a couple of times you mentioned additional price investment.
No, we are not.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Tushar Jain from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Just two questions. In terms of the volume uplift on 44 ranges, the two-thirds had the volume uplift. I was just wondering, is there anything specific to highlight why there was no volume uplift or less than expected on the rest of the one-third of the ranges? And just touching on the availability issue, as you move from 20% to 65%, how we should be thinking about the potential negative impact on the like-for-like sales. I mean, there was negative 2% in the first half. Does it go down and probably zero as you learn from, as you learn as the program progresses? Thanks.
So I will start with the volume uplift on the two-thirds of the ranges. I mean, you have very different picture on very different ranges, but clearly the best volume uplifts we have had on the unique bathroom ranges. And this is most probably what we can foresee also going forward, that the unique ranges will drive more. And I think we mentioned in the audio webcast that, for example, showers have a volume uplift of 9% overall. You will see different things on different ranges, depending on how big of a change we do to the market, both in terms of the offer and, of course, at what price levels we have put it there. So you will not have one consistent volume uplift on all the ranges.
And the thing as well is that we are still in early days. So in some of those categories, they've been implementing for 2 months, and we are looking at H1 numbers, which means that those numbers are impacting with the clearance effect and lots of different things. That's why we are kind of not cherry-picking the numbers. We've tried to be quite inclusive in the number. You know, you take bathroom, we include UK, so you have that feeling that it works overall. But you need to keep in mind that in all those numbers, this is very early days, and we don't have any range that has been going on for 6 months without clearance in any country so far. So, you know.
Got it.
Okay, on the other question about the 55 to 40%, I think that has been the decision of not of smoothing down because of the disruption we've been facing. So it's kind of, we are not changing the plan at all. I think we are going to deliver the 90% COGS that we've planned originally. We are smoothing it a little bit to reduce the disruption that we've been facing right now. We will have anyway, by the end of next year, an exit rate about 60%, which means that the job is done. Why we have that? It's because it's a phasing issue. We are looking at implementing the ranges when it makes sense from a business point of view. And if the range are not ready, already at a time, which is a peak as an example, we are not going to implement those ranges at peak season, and the peak can be different from different category. So it, in a way, this is what leads us to that 40% at least. It's not that the OSC team led by AYA are not doing the work. They are actually doing the work. It's just an implementation and so forth. It has consequences of the COGS because, as you know, we are measuring a COGS number.
Now, I'm just wondering, like, when I look into next year, should I be expecting a 2% or that kind of magnitude impact from availability as you move from 20 to 42 and then 40 to...
I think let me first answer the question that you are not going to ask, which is what is going to happen in H2, because I, no, but I think it's important for you to see the how things are going. I think in H2, we've taken some decision and we've explained that onto the video. So first, we have a new transformation teams led by Steve that is managing things in a different way. We've been learning from our first 6 months. Then we had some availability issue in B&Q when we switch off the FNR system into B&Q. Those have disappeared right now. And again, I think we had the teams with AYA were very new, and so they are getting on with the work. They are doing things for the second time right now, which, of course, is going to ease things. Anyway, we still have on H2 a big volume of change with a lot of range that are big, high number of SKUs, little elasticity when it is going to be to clearance. You take doors, handles and knobs, sealants and that kind of things, power tools accessories. So what we see in H2 is that probably not very much less disruption. But we are solving things, and what has happened in H1, because we understand the root cause, are not going to continue. But it's probably, you know, we expect similar level, a little bit less. When it goes to next year, again, I think next year is going to be a very big year for us again. I think that's really the too challenging. What will happen is that what has been implemented from an availability point of view this year should be okay. As I said, the IT platform problems are going to be resolved. So I think we are getting to fix most of the issue. I won't promise you to have any disruption next year. It should be more around 1% something than 2% that we are facing right now. But
got it,
they will still be disruption next year, let's be honest.
All right, thank you.
We will now take our next question from Warwick Okines from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to come back to that that clearance cost of 30 basis points in the first half of the year. I appreciate the range clearance changes over the next few years by category. But given that you've smoothed the implementation, is it fair to assume that 30 bips is a reasonable guess for the next couple of years in terms of drag on gross margin?
I think in the same way as, you know, the categories vary and we get different cost price reduction on the different categories as we implement, we're going to have different clearance costs on different categories as well, and we're going to have different implementation costs on different categories. And, you know, some of this will depend on whether or not you're talking about bathrooms or something like nuts, bolts and screws. You know, so where we've got sort of high SKU count within categories, then that actually is a bit more difficult to clear and re-merchandise than you know, some of the other things. But we've taken that all into consideration in our plan. So our plan actually has the clearance in it that corresponds with the category rollout.
Okay, so from the categories you plan to do next financial year, are those on average higher SKU count than this year or lower?
Mixture.
It's all a mixture. Yeah. It's a mixture.
It's a mixture, Warwick, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you can't at this stage say whether you're expecting higher or lower clearance costs next year?
We're not going to say. I think, you know, what we're saying is that we're in line with delivering the gross margins, which includes the cost price reduction and the clearance costs that we expected. We'll update a bit more on next year when we get to the full year results. We're still on track and committed to our overall deliverable, and it's not a front-loaded plan. So, you know, in these early years of the plan, there will be more clearance than by the time you've got 90% of your range, 80 to 90% of your range unified.
And we have given the information that we have an exit rate this year on 30% and next year on 60%, and of course that drives also the clearance construction.
Yeah. Okay. And different topic. I think on the webcast you mentioned there was less capex spend on existing stores as part of the full year plan on capex. Could you just maybe explain a little bit more why there's less spend on existing stores and whether that ties in with your best practice store trials that are going on?
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons. I mean, as I probably said over the years, it's difficult to predict when you're looking at properties exactly when you're going to get your permits, etc., in place. So some of the update just relates to a bit of slippage on some of the negotiations that we've got on our pipelines. But as well as that, what we actually said in the release was that this year we really want to focus on the transformation of the stores from the inside, so through the offer. There's a lot of activity going on in this organisation, as you've heard. So, of course, in the background, or not so much in the background here, but not in the figures that you see, we're working very hard on concept, on format. The pilot stores that you referred to are actually doing very well. But, you know, we're just, as Vera said, we're constantly sort of slightly adjusting this plan as we go along, and we'll be focusing on the offer this year, so that results in a bit less capex.
Right, so risk mitigation.
Sorry?
It's sort of risk mitigation.
Not really. No, because I think we just want to make sure that you know, we are building, if you like, revamping the best stores that we can possibly revamp.
I think, like many other retailers, we need to think about what is the future of our store. And when I say future, I'm not talking 10 years ahead, I'm talking 2 years ahead. I'm sure you've seen, like all of us, that Toys R Us was going bust, which, you know, is a big retailer. So I think all of us, we are just thinking about, in the new digital work, with building that digital capability. And I think it's not about mitigating risk, it's about spending the money in a way that makes perfect sense for the future. And I think, as Karen said, we are right now we are working about what is going to be our store format strategy. And as soon as we've got that, I think we will update you on that one by the year end, because I think we will be ready to. Then we will be able, if we want to spend probably more money. But as Karen said, there is no point revamping store in a way that we are not sure will suit for the future. So this is why we are. But it's not about managing risk, really. It's just spending the right money where it's needed in a good way.
Okay, thanks very much for the colour.
Our next question comes from Tony Sherritt from Whitman Howard. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks very much. Just a couple of things. Just following on from Warwick's question and the tone of your answer, is there a wider exercise going on at the moment in terms of looking at the sort of viability of the physical estate? I mean, is that sounds like something sort of new and different from what you've said in the past. And the second question is a bit more of an information one. I just wondered if you could tell us where the current levels of online sales are within B&Q and Castorama and how that's moved year on year.
Okay, I don't think if it was me that gave that impression about the viability of physical estate, it certainly was not what I thought I was saying, Tony. I think we are comfortable with the estate that we've got. We've closed the stores that we wanted to close. We're growing where we believe that there are good business opportunities to grow. So we're still absolutely rolling out our Screwfix stores, and we've opened a couple of stores in Poland. Clearly, every store has got to earn its keep in our portfolio, and that's why we do our portfolio reviews in the way in which I explained. And all I'm saying is that, you know, we have the opportunity, because of the length of the leases and when the lease renewals come out, to look at stores and you know, make the right decision about what we want to do in terms of lease renewals. The concept work is going well, and our revamped stores are performing well. Yes. Yeah.
On
digital participation, I think we said in the presentation, the group digital sales are now about 5%, and that's up from about 4% last year. So we've seen about a percentage point growth. For B&Q, it's about 4%, and in half one, that grew by about 17%. And France is about 1%. Which is growing reasonably well, but it's small numbers at the moment. But we'll accelerate, obviously, when we can get the digital platforms in there.
Thanks, Steve.
Our next question comes from James Grzinic from Jefferies. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes. Good morning, guys. I had two questions, one for Karen and one for Aria. Karen, can you perhaps be more specific on the magnitude of bonus and marketing savings at B&Q in F1, and maybe if you can combine the two, you could give us the pound amount. That'd be very helpful. For Aria, can you perhaps give us specifically what's happened in terms of sales response across the unified offer? So the 16% of COGS that have been unified, rather than picking a specific a unique category, it'd be great to understand what happened in value terms across all of the piece of change. Thank you.
Okay, on that one, I will be specific in saying that the beat to consensus largely came from costs and largely came from the UK, and so that was a number of around £10 million, and that included what we did on bonuses and certainly on GNFR, and we've upgraded our view of what we can get from GNFR benefits for the full year. That's all I really want to say on that.
Yes, and James, on the sales response on the 16%, it's been broadly flat, excluding clearance on total, and broadly flat, including clearance, and slightly down, excluding clearance. And bearing in mind that these are the total numbers, and you, for example, have B&Q store closures in those. So with different results on different projects, of course.
That's great. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Simon Bowler from Exane. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, I just wanted to come back to actually the second quarter or even kind of first half revenue trends that we're seeing in the UK in particular. And just wondering to what extent they surprised yourself or how that was versus your own internal expectations. And you've obviously mentioned within the report today in terms of uncertainty around the outlook, and just wondering if you could update for anything you may have seen within the business from a UK macro perspective.
Okay, so starting with that last point, no, we're not really seeing any strong indication within the business around what's happening in the UK macro. We're cautious on that because I think we are in a time of geopolitical uncertainty. But our customers' buying habits have pretty much not shown a sign of change. And you know, I think you can see we've released some very strong sales growth in Screwfix in particular. Now, you said, was I surprised by the sales trend in the UK? You know, I think from about quarter three last year, we were flagging that this was a very big year in terms of transformation, and our transformation was likely to you know, have a few bumps along the way, and that's what we've seen. We've seen a few bumps along the way, and we reckon that the impact of disruption, if you like, on our business so far has been in the region of about 2%. In terms of other, you know, what did we expect and what we didn't expect in the UK, the sales transference from the closed stores in B&Q is coming through still as we had planned it to do. So we've got about plus 1% on sales transference there.
Okay, very clear. Thank you.
We will now take our final question from Georgina Johan from JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Morning, guys. Thanks for taking my questions. Just two quick ones on France, please. First of all, you commented that traffic in store had been up for the first time in a while. Was just wondering if you could sort of comment on what you think is driving that, in the sense that is it market driven, or perhaps you've increased marketing spend to highlight the new sort of unique bathroom ranges in store and so on. So anything around that would be helpful. And then second of all, you've talked a lot about disruption, but apologies if I missed it, I don't think you sort of mentioned and updated on some of the disruption that you were seeing from local suppliers in France, and I just wondered if you could give an update on that, please.
Okay, so on the first one, I think, you know, to answer your question, it's not about increasing marketing spend, because we haven't. At this stage, I think we are doing what we need to do in stores, but we haven't been investing massively in terms of marketing, because as I said it, I think we will be doing something probably a little bit more global when we will have the new website up and running, because a lot of the marketing thing needs to be online right now. Certainly, it's market driven. As you know, we've underperformed the market for a few months now, so probably what we are doing, we are taking more shares out of this market, but I think nothing significant from a marketing spend. So we haven't been pushing to get to that traffic, slight traffic growth. It's more about implementing what we said we would from a One Kingfisher plan perspective. And you know, the team, whatever, even if we were in the operating company, both Brico and Casto, are really focused on doing the right thing for the customer. So, you know, we are bringing them new means and tools to be able to do it better.
On your second question, Georgia, I guess your question is if there has been a disruption from local suppliers in France. First of all, we are definitely reducing the suppliers radically. That's without doubt. It goes without saying. The thing is that we've been, what I believe, very fair with suppliers. We give them all the opportunity to re-tender, and the ones that are competitive in the tenders, they will win the business. So it's not like everyone has lost their business. And we are very keen on running open and transparent process for the categories. The suppliers that have won the business are very happy. Then suppliers that we are delisting, we of course have a contracted agreement with them to supply to the end where we are bringing in the new ranges. So the listing of local suppliers in France has not been a main cause of disruption.
Thanks very much.
I will now turn the call back to Ms. Levi for any additional or closing remarks.
No specific remarks. Just want to thank you very much for your questions, and to remind you, our next results will be our Q3 sales update in November. And as I said earlier, more details will be coming in terms of our capital markets event, which we have scheduled or decided on for the 3rd of November. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That will conclude today's call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.